Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WUSA 9 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Colon cancer is the number two cause of cancer deaths in the United States. One in 20 people will get colon cancer in their lifetime. Early diagnosis and prevention are the best weapons against this disease. What type of screening is needed to detect it, and what are some of the treatments? Well, we're going to talk about this and much more. My guest is Dr. Richard Gelfand. He's a gastroenterologist with Capital Digestive Care. Welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Thank you, Shirley. Thank you for having me.
Now, why do people not get colon cancer screenings like they should?
Well, that is a good question, because it's a test that I believe in fervently and very enthusiastically, because we save lives every day. I think this is terrific that you're having this program, because this is the opportunity, if any of your people out there have not had their colonoscopy, to get it, and which helps them and helps prevent this dreaded disease.
Well, you know, I think PrEP, all of everybody talks about, oh, I hate the PrEP for this disease. Tell us what that is.
There's no question that PrEP is one of the barriers that I hear all the time, why people don't seek out this and are apprehensive about having it. But I want to tell you, Shirley, we've really improved the PrEP.
What is it? I mean, this is a cleaning. You have to cleanse a colon so that you can examine it, right? And that's what the preparation is going to do. And there is a process that you go through. And you do have to do a little bit of fasting. I ought to know, because I just had a colonoscopy very recently and passed with flying colors. As a matter of fact, you told me I had a beautiful colon. So we're living on that. You understand, don't you?
There's no question. We are sending pictures out of your colon. They are so beautiful.
But tell our listeners about the PrEP and what it really involves.
So what we're talking about, so all our listeners are with us, is that colonoscopy is a way to prevent colon cancer. Why? Colonoscopy, what it means is looking, the ability to look inside the colon where there are growths called polyps, which unfortunately grow silently. They don't let you know they're growing. And we know this is the start of the process, how colon cancer develops. Fortunately, when we find it at an early stage in a polyp before it turns into a cancer, we can remove it and thus prevent any cancer that could develop later on.
Now, I'm sorry, you're talking about the removal. I just want to tell our listeners, this is not an unpleasant process, because last time I had a colonoscopy, I did have something, polyps that had to be removed. And as a matter of fact, Dr. Gelfand was my doctor, and he was a little bit concerned about some of them. But I'm happy to say that they had not reoccurred, and I was fine from my treatment. So to let people know that a removal of a polyp is not necessarily a big deal.
Absolutely. They'll feel no pain during the whole procedure, but especially removing the polyp, people are concerned that this will be a painful experience. It's not. And we can talk about that later, because that's another barrier to people getting it. But getting back to the PrEP, PrEP is short for preparation. In order to actually view inside the colon, there's a process involved, the preparation, PrEP for short, that we're talking about, which involves cleaning out the colon in order for the colonoscopist, gastroenterologist, to see well inside the colon to remove any polyps or growths. And this is a barrier, because people have heard bad things about it, and I'm here to tell you it's not like it used to be.
No, it isn't. And I've had them over the years. My father had colon cancer, and I know that there can be a genetic component, as well as anybody can get colon cancer. But for someone like me, it didn't kill my father. It was diagnosed early, and fortunately, it did not cause his death. But it is something that's important for anyone.
That's absolutely right. Absolutely. Very important for everybody. We know that if you have a family history of colon cancer, there is a higher risk than the general population, but everybody has a risk, and the current guidelines recommend that everybody, because you can't tell if a polyp is growing, they grow silently, the only way to know is to look. So I tell my patients it's a win-win situation. At age 50, you have your colonoscopy. If fortunately we don't find anything, you have no family history, it's 10 years for the follow-up by current guidelines. Not so bad. On the other hand, if we find a polyp, I also tell my patients this is good news, because we have identified something that had we not attended to might have gone on to cancer later on. We are able to remove it painlessly, prevent a colon cancer, and typically if it's a small polyp, we'd follow up a little sooner, 5 years, but not so bad. And the key is prevention.
Yeah, and the prevention being through the screening process.
Through the screening process. Now, you mentioned your father, family history. We screen a little bit earlier. We typically recommend if you have a family history, a first-degree relative, mother, father, brother, sister, with colon cancer or colon polyps, we begin screening at age 40 or 10 years younger than the index case. So, for example, if your father had had colon cancer at a relatively early age, at 45, we would actually begin screening in the other family members at 35.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's because of the family history.
That's because of the family history. We always try to stratify risks and who gets it, and everybody is at risk, but some a bit more.
Okay. So that's, I think what you just said is so important. Everyone is at risk.
Everyone is at
risk.
Now,
I guess, is breast cancer the number one killer in this country, or is it, do you not know?
Killer is actually lung cancer, which is highly associated with cigarette smoking. And if you take out the cigarette smokers, colon cancer rises to number one on the list of cancer deaths.
Wow. Now, I'm interested in what things that we hear. For example, I hear ads about doing a virtual colonoscopy.
Right.
This is not what you and I are talking about.
Right.
We're talking about a real colonoscopy.
We had a traditional colonoscopy, which involves an instrument that has a little camera chip. I'm sorry, at the end that is about the thickness of a finger. And we're able to navigate with controls through the entire colon. Virtual colonoscopy has come along, and let me just say, whoever the marketing person who thought of the term virtual colonoscopy should definitely win an award. What a wonderful concept, virtual colonoscopy. It makes you think patients come in. It's almost Star Trek-like, Shirley. You know, beam me up, Scotty. We don't have to have any of these bad things. It's not quite that way. And I get a lot of patients who hear about it who really, you know, there's some misconceptions. So traditionally now what we're doing, we're seeing traditional colonoscopy as the primary screening test. Virtual colonoscopy has a place, but it has some negatives that I think people should be aware of. The first thing is it's not really a virtual colonoscopy. The correct medical term is a colography, CT colography. CT colography means this is actually a radiation test, a CT scan view of the colon.
Mm-hmm.
And as such, it has radiation exposure, which it's risk you want to minimize. Unfortunately, the only bad thing about colonoscopy that people complain about is the prep, even though we've improved it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still the same prep involved in virtual colonoscopy.
So you're not saving anything.
You're not saving that. And probably the biggest drawback is that if you see something on quote-unquote virtual colonoscopy, the CT colography, then you can't do anything about it then. You need to have now another test, colonoscopy, to remove it.
Right.
So there are other things involved in it. But when I get through telling my patients about the benefits, it's actually interesting in studies, even though virtual colonoscopy sounds so good, when they do studies, it's actually more unpleasant than colonoscopy because we have a big advantage. You know, virtual colonoscopy is kind of done by the radiologist, traditional colonoscopy by the gastroenterologist. And we, when I say colonoscopists, we have a big advantage. We have wonderful medicine, sedation, anesthesia that makes people comfortable.
Oh, the medicine's wonderful.
And this is also a new step forward. We have different medications and sedation ability than we did in the past, where patients are totally comfortable. And when you're having a virtual colonoscopy, you have a lot of air insufflated when put up, and that is not comfortable.
Right.
And the studies show that patients actually prefer, from a comfort level,
if they've done it.
Right.
If they've done it.
But
yeah.
Let me just say that virtual colonoscopy has a good place in
people. And that's really what you need to discuss with your doctor if it's something for you, I suspect.
Well,
yeah. Let's just take a break. We'll come back to this. Just to let you know, you're listening to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Dr. Richard Gelfand. He is gastroenterologist at the Capital Digestive Care, and we're talking about colonoscopies. Now, you were talking about the virtual.
Yeah, I just wanted to complete what we were saying before is that they're complementary tests, and we still use virtual colonoscopy, typically not the primary screening. There are a few patients who won't go through it, and I certainly would recommend to go ahead of that. But there are some situations which it's particularly useful. On rare circumstances, the colonoscopist cannot see the entire colon. It's particularly twisty. Mm-hmm. And then it's very good to have another way to view the colon. So there are pros and cons of both. But traditionally now, colonoscopy is the preferred by most gastroenterologists screening tests.
Okay. Let's talk about colon cancer and its causes. Now, we've talked about the genetic factor. Does diet play a part, a small part, a big part? I mean, do we know how important diet is, eating fibers, fruits, and all the good stuff?
There is no question that diet plays a role. If you look at a global map, there with Western diets and our eating too much fat and are, as a country, getting fatter, we have a greater increase in colorectal cancer. If you look at areas, Aborigines, tribals, areas in Africa where they eat nuts and fruits, they have a lower incidence. Now, having said that, the best prevention is still colonoscopy and looking.
Of course.
You know, we certainly recommend a diet that's low in fat, controlling your weight, not smoking. Smoking is another risk factor. You can't control your genes, so we can't do anything about that. So it's good advice, but by far and away, getting your colonoscopy pales to any other factor as far as prevention.
Now, does most people, you know, people are listening here and thinking, well, this is going to be an expensive procedure, and I assume it's fairly expensive. Now, I know my insurance covered it, at least a greater part of it. Is it true that most insurance companies will cover colonoscopies?
Well, this is the good news now. You know, this is very apropos for this radio station because, you know, one thing, you don't have to be an expert in politics or just pick up the paper or listen to the radio to know that these days Democrats and Republicans agree on very little. But one thing, Shirley, I can tell you, they came together on, they agree that colonoscopy saves lives. And as a result, there has actually been legislation enacted, agreed upon by Democrats and Republicans, that ensures that insurance companies mandate must pay for a screening colonoscopy.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So the cost is at no cost or very minimal, but certainly a low cost to no cost for everybody at 50. So cost should be no barrier for people to have their screening done.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. Now, probably this is no way to answer this, but I suspect that exercise, as it plays a part in so many diseases, that it's also important in preventing a lot of diseases.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm certainly a proponent as a physician for exercise. I can't tell you that there's been a terrific study that tells us we can, but exercise in relation to keeping your weight down would be an indirect way, I would say, there's a good connection. But the major factors are, you know, genetics, the obesity, smoking. These are things that are you can't control your genes, but the other factors are controlled.
Right. Now,
so
let's
exercise is good.
Worst case scenario, someone has colon cancer. What's going to happen?
So again, this is also a triumph, really. An underappreciated story of how well we do. You know, when people say, when is there going to be a cure for cancer? Well, here's the second or first leading cause of a cancer death. 9% of all cancer deaths are colon cancer. And we have an essentially preventable and treatable cancer. So it's not fair to say, you know, a cure for cancer. You have to really subdivide. And
right.
Colon cancer is a cancer where we've made unbelievable progress. If we can find cancer at an early stage, we have a 90% cure rate.
Wow.
Of colon cancer. And so that is a tremendous a point that I make to my patients when they I have, you know, you ask about barriers to colonoscopy. Some people say, you know, I'm just scared to find out that I have colon cancer. That's not a good attitude.
You should want to find out.
You want to find out because if we can do it early, we can cure you. So the what I call the bury the head in the sand approach, the ostrich approach,
yes,
does not work.
No.
And it's better to find out because we can do very, very things and also cure with, you know, not what people think of cancer treatments as losing your hair and very sick. Most of the time, early cancer, even some early cancers, can be treated with colonoscopy and removing a polyp without any surgery. Others with surgery, and some require some mild chemotherapy in the early stage, mm-hmm. but typically very well tolerated and very well. And I have patients who have done extremely well from my first day of practice many years ago, mm-hmm. cured.
Who've had colon cancer
and cured. Many in my practice.
Yeah, that's a very encouraging thing. And yes, you shouldn't be scared. You really should go out there and find out and then take steps if you have to. But as someone who's just had a colonoscopy, I can tell you it's not that unpleasant. It really isn't. And what I found that was useful to me was drinking, I don't hate to use brand names, but sports drinks. So let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Dr. Richard Gelfand. He's a gastroenterologist at Capital Digestive Care, and we're talking about your colon. Now, going back to what I was just saying, I found that by drinking the sports drink, which, and what does that do? Tell us, it balances your electrolytes, whatever
right.
that
so,
means.
So we with PrEPs, let's get back to the whole PrEP
okay.
issue.
Because yes, I think that's where people are hung
that's
up.
That's a major barrier. And the conception is from before, we used to, many years ago when we did this, we had only one PrEP, and it was a gallon jug solution, off-putting with 16 glasses required in a short period of time. It was tough, very tough
awful.
To take. Now we have made progress. First of all, there are many options, and I really encourage, I think if you have, you know, a good gastroenterologist there, they will talk you through the various options, and not one size fits all. But one of the latest ones is as comparison, we've condensed the volume from 16 glasses to 2 large glasses. We like a lot of fluid around to help move things through. And sports drinks are often recommended because they have some electrolytes. When you have a good cleaning out, you can potentially lose some potassium and sodium and feel a little weak. And this just helps make you feel better as you go through the cleansing process.
I have to tell you, I didn't, aside from being a little bit hungry and missing my glass of wine for dinner, I didn't find it difficult at all. A little
good.
Jello helped here and there, you know,
sure.
a few calories.
And it's
some
not
sugar.
Starvation. That's the other thing. People say, oh, I can't eat anything the day before. Not true.
That's not true.
It's a clear liquid diet, so there's enough to get through.
Well, actually, I had my procedure at 3 o'clock in the afternoon the next day. So that morning of the day before, I started out by having some poached eggs on toast,
right,
white
a low
toast.
Roughage breakfast, sure.
Right. And then I had chicken sandwich with nothing on it except bread,
Absolutely.
White bread. And then by dinner time, I'd had Jell-O and some Gatorade or whatever your choice of drink is. And the next morning, you could do the same thing. And I could have coffee with no cream and sugar.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Very good. You're a good patient.
Well, I mean, I felt it was important. I didn't want to have to do this twice. So.
That's exactly right. And following instructions, we do get very clean colons now if patients follow instructions with the newer PrEPs.
Yeah.
And that makes all the difference in detection, which is so important.
Sure, it really does. And the reason you don't want people to eat a lot of fiber or anything is because it just adds content to the colon that
and
you
hard,
have to remove.
And hard to see. We mm-hmm. don't want, we don't, I like to tell my patients, we don't like a cloudy day. We like it to be clear.
That's a good description. Well, what kind of feedback do you get from your patients? I mean, they talk about the preparation.
Right. So,
and they're saying now, as I'm saying, it's not something that you should be scared of or concerned about. You do have to go without food for a little bit, but you can, you know, it's surprising how good lemon Jell-O is.
Well, I have to tell you, you know, for honesty's sake, you know, there's no question the most difficult part of the procedure. The procedure itself is a piece of cake with our medicines and anesthesia. So I have to say that still the part that most the patients find most unpleasant, even though it's improved, is the prep. But it's tremendously variable. And that's why I say talk to your doctor. You know, one prep might be not perfect. I mean, people still, some people don't mind the taste. Some people, it's very variable. There's the same prep. One person can say, oh, this is the most awful tasting stuff, but I did it. The other person said, you know, that's not that bad.
It wasn't
bad.
And,
you know, it's just, you know, taste buds and things. And that's why we work around it. And it's certainly doable. Is it fun? No. But considering the benefit and the gain, it's well worth it.
Well, the twilight sleep thing
is wonderful.
What it is wonderful because you go to sleep very gently. First thing you know, you wake up, you feel fantastic. I mean, you told me I couldn't drive and that I didn't really have my mind about me, but I sure felt good.
Right. Usually you feel fine. We say that to be cautious, but most people at the end of the procedure are awake, alert, and they feel good.
Yeah. Yeah,
they feel good.
I was told not to sign divorce documents for my husband, not to give him everything I own, not to do any of those things.
Right.
but yeah, and it is. And, you know, it's unfortunate because it is a preventable disease. And I think that's what needs to be underscored to people is that, you know what, you only have a little discomfort because you do get a little bit hungry. But go for it. I mean, you really should go for it. And it's nice to hear that. If you start at 50, you don't have to have your next one until 60 you're clear.
That is current guidelines. If there is no family history, no family history of colon cancer or polyps, no other factors, inflammatory bowel disease, and we don't find a polyp, 10 years is the current recommendation.
Does Capital Digestive Care have a website that's going to describe all this to consumers?
They do. They have at capitaldigestivecare.com. We have a very full website. Talks about some of these same issues, and I encourage people to check it out.
And that's capital with a
capital
a.
with an AL.
AL. Capital digestivecare.com. And you can go there and get answers to questions and all that sort of stuff.
Sure.
Do you have any pictures of what the procedure is like? I don't mean literally pictures, but pictures of people's colon. Are you going to put mine up there because they're so beautiful?
I've heard there have been a lot of
discussion,
a lot of YouTube requests for your colon, Shirley,
okay.
for yours.
All right, okay.
But we've held back so far. So far, no.
But really, the message is it is treatable. It is preventable.
Correct.
And that's even more significant,
right.
I think.
And I guess the sad thing for me is we have such a terrific test I think is underappreciated. You know, we're always looking for the next greatest breakthrough in cancer research that's on the news and this mouse study and that mouse study. We have something right here and now that saves lives. I feel good about what I do every day because we save lives. And we've proven it. We have a New England Journal of Medicine article that shows that we have cut the rate of colon cancer deaths in half.
That's amazing.
And we can do it even more with colonoscopy. We have now only a fraction of the people eligible take part in colonoscopy screening. We've improved recently. The statistics show that about 6-7 years ago, we were about 50%. I think we're up to approximately 65% now. But boy, we can do better than that. We have a test that's available. I'd really like to see as close to 100% as possible.
Yeah, well, let's see if we can do something to help those people. I'm sitting here as testimonial that do it. It's not unpleasant. And it's something that can, from my mind, it was a great relief because the last time I'd had one, there was some concern about some polyps. So I feel relieved. Well, thank you so much. And for our listeners, you've been tuned into Of Consuming Interest right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest has been Dr. Richard Gelfand, a gastroenterologist at Capital Digestive Care. I'm Shirley Rooker, and thank you for joining us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WUSA 9 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.